Listen to conversations with some of today's most innovative brands to hear practical advice and insight on technology, customer experience, co-creation, marketing, entrepreneurship, and more. Welcome to the Brand Lab series from AE Marketing Group.
Hi, Natalie. How are you today?
Good. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great, although it's so funny because it just seemed like yesterday that you were sitting right next to me in studio with Cheryl Moe from Capgemini, but here you are now back in the Salt Lake City studio. But I'm super excited, though, to talk with today's guest. I know we're both really interested in travel, design, customer experience, and of course, marketing.
Yeah, actually, how do you know Blair Hildahl?
Well, we met about a year and a half ago at the Inc. 5000 Awards by chance. We were both on the Inc. 5000 list, and we were both seated next to each other, unbeknownst to one another, at a table. And we just got to chat over the course of an evening. And since then, we've kind of digitally connected. And as a fellow marketer, it's really been interesting to see a lot of the content that he's put out. And I'm really excited to have him on and have him expand upon that. Blair is the chief marketing officer, and he's a principal at Base 4, which is an architecture and engineering firm. And they're really helping design the hotels of the future, which is why I know this is going to be a great conversation. They're global in reach, and like our company, they're a two-time winner of the Inc. 5000, so they're also really growing quickly.
Well, I'm excited to interview him as well. Blair, welcome to the Brand Lab series.
Yes, thank you for having me, guys. It's exciting to be on here, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, well, Blair, as I had mentioned, I have had the chance to get to know you and see a lot of the interesting work that you've been doing, that Base 4 has been doing. But why don't you share a little bit with our audience about Base 4, your role as chief marketing officer? And I'm really interested to know, what is a PE, an LEED, AP? You've got a lot of titles after your name.
Don't let the letters confuse you. I just put them there to look important.
Well, it works.
It's marketing, right? But yeah, I appreciate you having me on here. So a little bit about Base 4. We are an architecture and engineering company. That's ultimately our service offering. We specialize specifically in the hospitality and hotel sector. So we more or less design hotels. Now, the only thing that's really different there is how we go about doing our business. We are definitely not a traditional brick and mortar company. We actually consider ourselves much more of a tech company than we do a traditional design company. And the reason for that is just mainly in the way we operate. All of our staff in the U.S., myself included, we all work from home offices. We also have large offices overseas, down in the Caribbean, in the Dominican Republic, in Santiago, Nagpur, India, Tbilisi, Georgia, the country of Georgia, and Shanghai, China. And our model is actually quite simple. We try to work 24 hours a day. In our sector, we'll design everything in-house, so we don't outsource anything. And we work on really nothing but U.S.-based hotels. So that's kind of the gist of how we do business. And we've tried to bring a sector that has traditionally been very antiquated and old school in the way architecture is done, and try to bring a fresh tech sense to the way business is being done.
Well, I know Natalie's going to ask you a little bit about technology in a minute, but that was a great overview on Base 4, and I've had the opportunity to get to see some of this really innovative things that you guys are doing. But could you expand then a little bit upon maybe your role as chief marketing officer there?
Certainly. So I have two business partners, myself, and then I have two individuals based in Nashville and Miami, and we've all kind of taken our silos of the company, and mine happens to be on the marketing and branding side. And really, my job in this company is to make sure we're in front of our clients and protect our brand. You know, those are kind of my chief roles, and you know, on top of leading our business development efforts and making sure that our pipeline is full. So, you know, as far as what those efforts look like from a day-to-day activity, you know, our main marketing efforts, I guess you could say, are a couple things. Primarily content marketing. We really invest in a lot of time in our newsletter program, which I try to send out almost on a weekly basis. And that's really on an educational level. We're targeting hotel owners, hotel developers, operators, management companies, and contractors, and just picking a topic every week, diving into it and saying, this is a topic we think that you guys would be interested in and would save you time and money on your projects moving forward. And, you know, we really try to stay away from anything salesy, really dive into the education piece and bringing great value in very short snippets. You know, something you can read in a couple minutes, you really, really kind of tear it down to a couple of thesis points and trying to deliver some great content. You know, outside of that, we really push the social media platforms, primarily LinkedIn. Again, just trying to stay where our clients are and, you know, really utilizing that platform to get out in front of an area where we know a lot of developers are right now. And then some of the more traditional aspects, which would be attending the conferences and trade shows and, you know, doing the dog and pony show where you stand at a booth. So, you know, those are the kind of the three main marketing aspects. On top of that, you know, I lead a team on the concept and business development side of about 25 staff. And those staff basically provide non-billable work. You know, our goal is when we meet a developer, we want to show them what we can do. We found that if they get a taste of working with us, they'll see the value that we can bring in as an organization, primarily in the way we do business on the tech side and how quickly we can turn things around. If, you know, a developer comes to us at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and he's got a new site he's looking at, possibly purchasing, you know, we'll just say, you know, send us the site, give us kind of a quick program of what you'd like to put on the site. And by the next morning on his desk, you know, by 9 a.m., he'll have a full code study, which would be like a 10-page document that would say, this is what you're allowed to do on this site as far as how high you can go, how much surface area you can build, and then a full conceptual layout. So a site plan, floor plans, elevations, and large guest room plans, you know, and showing them when we do that work for free, obviously there's a lot invested there, but it also gives us a great opportunity to show a client much more than just sharing it in words, what it's like to work with our firm.
Okay, so we still haven't heard what PELEED and AP stand for. maybe you can tie it in.
Yes, my background is I'm actually an engineer. I'm a licensed structural engineer. I'm a professional engineer is what the PE stands for. LEED AP is actually it's one acronym. That's a LEED accredited professional. LEED is the U.S. government's certification program for green building. So if a developer wants to get, you know, a lot of green credits, their building will be certified as a LEED building. And there's different levels of certification for a building, but it basically means that they're meeting some standards for environmental and design. And it will include things like rainwater recycling, energy efficient HVAC equipment, those types of items. So as a LEED AP, that just means I've gone through the training program and passed their certification exams to sit on a project of that type.
Very cool. So talk about how technology is changing the way you design and build hotels.
Well, you know, as I alluded to, we really rely on technology in our sector. We're trying to really bring it into every aspect of the way we do business. You know, we're on a Skype call here. Skype is actually how all of our staff communicate. You know, we have 230 staff around the world, and we use the Skype platform to communicate one another along with other platforms like GoToMeeting. We're essentially sitting next to each other, working off the same server, you know, just not seeing each other in person, even though they're on a video screen. So, and just, you know, in the way we do business, you know, that's the tech side. Now, as far as design, we use a software called Revit. You know, I won't dive into it too much, but traditionally, especially in our sector, architects use a software called AutoCAD, which is basically just a digital 2D piece of paper where, you know, you draw a floor plan and then you go up and you draw the next floor plan, you draw an elevation, and it's all in 2D. What Revit does is it allows you to take it to the next level. We're actually drawing everything in 3D space. So, you know, if you look at one of our hotels and you go into the fitness room and you're looking at one of our models on one of our computer screens here and you fly into the building, you're going to see it, you know, in 3D space. You're going to see an elliptical, a treadmill all modeled out. You're going to see where it plugs into the electrical outlet that our electrical engineers have designed, where, you know, the HVAC duct dumps into the ceiling height or the structural beam is. It's all there in 3D space. So we're essentially building the hotels virtually before a shovel ever goes in the ground. And what that does is it eliminates a lot of the issues that you see with coordination. You know, traditional design would be an architect would do it in 2D, and then he would also outsource the structural and MEP design to another firm that would do it in 2D CAD. So now you've got all these plans with, you know, floor plans, and trying to figure out what happens in between is really falls on the contractor. And more often than not, issues arise in the field and construction, and those turn into change orders for an owner because they're items that the contractor hadn't originally bid, and problems that he has to solve that shouldn't have really been there in the first place. And 3D design in Revit takes away a lot of that aspect because, as you can imagine, when you're building things virtually 3D, you can't physically draw a mechanical duct through a steel beam without there being a red flag in the software that says, hey, Mr. Designer, this is an area you need to look at and address. So that is really heavy where we're seeing the tech side. So every day we're saying, okay, how can we take this and push it to the next level? We're designing in 3D. We're bringing the coordination aspect. What can we do next? So right now, you know, just kind of give you a feel for what we're pushing in 2018 is we want to be able to pull all the quantities out of a drawing package. And what I mean by that is traditionally when a project goes to a contractor to build, he has to bid it, which means that he's going to go through and he's going to calculate all the concrete that's in a project, all the wood, every little piece of millwork. And if we can take that model and we can pull out attributes of it, so we could actually deliver with our plans a full quantity. So every piece of concrete, every piece of rebar, every piece of 2x4 that's in that building, and give it to an owner along with their bid, there's a lot of value in that. And, you know, also doing things like shadow studies and drone fly-throughs and really pushing the edge on what we can do with virtual reality.
Well, Blair, I've seen some of this through, as you alluded to earlier, a lot of great content marketing. As someone who's not actually in the business per se, but really appreciates design, the use of technology, I'm super fascinated as I see some of the modeling and some of that kind of stuff that you share. And it's really cool and very consistent with a couple other guests we've had on where technology is so core to their business and you're using it in a way to obviously be efficient, but also be differentiating. And as technology continues to kind of evolve, and I know this past year, a huge buzz has always been like the Internet of Things, or as Howard Tolman would say, the Internet of Everything. So as you start to see some of the IoT aspects of technology, how are you kind of seeing that in either the hotel design itself, or maybe it's the rooms, or maybe it's how the facility is managed? Are you seeing any of that yet?
Definitely. You know, in fact, I was just reading an article a couple weeks ago. You know, Marriott has something they call their innovation lab, and they partner with some of the bigger electronic companies such as Legrand, Samsung, and they've built their IoT guest room lab. It's a way to test out new experiences that might be something they want to start implementing in some of their projects down the road. And, you know, it's everything from tying in the ability for a guest to turn on their shower at a specific temperature, or, you know, notify housekeeping that they're going to be leaving the room and they'd like to have it cleaned. The lab is actually just powered by an IoT system that connects all the devices throughout the room. Now, all of this is very cool, which as a tech guy, you know, myself and Brian, you'd probably really appreciate. The challenge here is cool doesn't always mean there's an ROI. And really diving
in. It doesn't?
So the challenge is looking at each one of these items and saying, yes, this is really cool. This would be awesome to have in a hotel. Guests would love it. There'd be a wow factor. But is there an ROI? Is a guest actually willing to pay extra for this feature? Because there's, of course, a cost associated that comes with every one of these items. I saw that, I believe it was Hilton in one of their most recent releases of testing out this type of technology. They actually have a shower. They just put it in. In fact, it may have been Austin. I could check on that. But you walk into your shower and the glass is actually an activated device that's tied back to an IoT system. In other words, so if I'm in the shower, and everyone knows we have our brightest ideas in the shower, I sketch it out in Steam with my finger on the glass, and then I'll hit send and it will be sent to my device. And later in a boardroom meeting, I will open up my tablet and show them my sketch that I came up with in the shower the night before. Now, these are all obviously areas that are being tested out and seeing, you know, where does this make sense? Obviously, an item like this, I've seen lots of pushback, especially, you know, just in the privacy side of no one really wanting an internet connected device anywhere near their shower in a hotel room for that matter. But it's just, you know, always pushing the curve on where can we really push more technology into this industry.
That reminds me of a guest we just had on, the global innovation leader for Bosch Global, Dennis Boker. And we were in their connectory IoT space, and they had some phenomenal things, some which are already in market today, and some are some prototypes, but everything from standing in front of a mirror, you know, to be able to, as soon as it recognizes that you're looking at it, a certain display can come up, and you can get all types of information right on your mirror, and you can, like, push a button if you're upstairs, I guess in your home, and you can activate your coffee maker so that when you walk downstairs or into the other room, your coffee's ready for you exactly the way you like it. So that stuff, as you said, is super cool, but you always have to think about the feasibility, the scalability, the economics involved with that. But that's really interesting to see, you know, where some of this technology could kind of take us. And as you think about all of what you've been talking about so far, and Natalie, now do you see why I knew Blair'd be a great guest to have on?
Yeah, for sure. This is fascinating. Reminds me of the movie The Minority Report.
Well, that was a little scary, so hopefully not.
I don't know how to read that one.
I mean, one of the reasons why, as I said, I'm not exactly in your core business, but I really appreciate it, is you're marrying together technology with design. And in the long game, this is really improving the customer experience of the hotel guests. And I know both of us travel a lot for work. So talk about how some of the good design that you're seeing in the building of these hotels can really improve customer experience.
Well, you know, we say every day that we're in the business of guest experience. We talked a lot about tech, but ultimately, at the end of the day, we're in the guest experience business, right? So, you know, what does a guest see, feel, smell when they enter their hotel room? You know, these things play a huge impact on what that guest walks away and says about that hotel, or whether they're going to be a returning guest. You know, and it's little things, you know, and if you travel a lot, you see them. You know, for example, there's something called a PTAC. It's in every hotel room, and you might not even know that it's what it's called, but it's the little air conditioner that's underneath the window that's in your standard mid-stay select service hotel. They are a staple of the industry, and everyone hates them because, you know, they're loud, the compressors kick in when you're sleeping, and this goes back to the ROI talk about delivering something that you know the guest wants, you know that the guest really needs, but it really has to make sense from the bottom line. And I think really, you know, everything in our industry has really rolled back to ROI, you know, and I'm going to keep saying that because really there's so much stuff we could be putting into these properties and, you know, just really innovative features, but it really has to make sense from the bottom line. And, you know, for example, a lot of the new hotels right now are putting in energy management systems, which is one area that's very tech friendly, but also really works towards the bottom line. The way those would work is you would tie the occupancy sensors in a guest room, which basically notifies the system. We'll call it an energy management system for the hotel if there is a guest in that room. And they'll say, okay, Brian Walker is in room 322 right now. All right, Brian Walker has now left room 322. He had the room set at 72 degrees. We're going to pull that setback back to 76 because we know it's 8 in the morning. He's a business traveler. He just left for the day. He's likely not going to be back for 8 hours. We wouldn't expect him to set his thermostat back and save us money and energy, but we will do that for him. And then as soon as you come back, the occupancy sensor picks you up immediately and says, okay, Brian's back from his day. We're going to kick that back in. The same aspect can get applied to pretty much everything in the room. You know, if you leave the TV on, it will turn the TV off. If you leave lights on, it will turn the lights off. And really tying this back to a management system that can also tie in with facilities management. So if I'm the maintenance manager for a large Hilton property, okay, I can see that this HVAC system in that room 233 has run, you know, maybe 1,000 hours more than the next system. I know that that system is going to be maintenance soon. So we can actually track the hours that specific appliances, specific HVAC systems have been on. No one filter changes need to pop up because they're actually going to be flagged by how long that piece of equipment has been run. So systems like that are making much more sense to a developer. Now, a customer doesn't see any of that now, which is the challenge, of course, because as a customer, if anything, you might be even a little frustrated when you come back to the room and you're thinking, hey, why did this swing back up to 76 degrees while I was gone? I'm hot. I've been, wearing a suit all day. It's 90 degrees out. So, there's obviously a different level of acceptability based on the brand. And, if I'm staying at a lower tier property, there's an expectation level. If I'm staying at a 5-star property, there's an expectation level. When I walk into that room, it's going to be left as when I found it. So, there's all kinds of different things we're seeing from design, but really it rolls back to, where can we ultimately deliver on the bottom line without sacrificing guest experience?
I have a little dirty secret for our audience and you is that I like my hotel rooms between 63 and 65 degrees. So when you're talking about 72, let alone 76, I'm already starting to sweat. But I absolutely agree with you about one of the biggest things about customer experience in general is expectation setting. And I think what's getting harder and harder for brands in your industry, whether you're talking about the very high end, Four Seasons asks of the world, or even the more moderately priced run-of-the-mill hotels, I think a lot of times consumers are struggling with that expectation gap because they kind of have the expectation that if nothing else, they're going to have a good experience wherever they go. Mind it, that could be mitigated a bit, but it's so interesting to understand all the different nuances that really go in behind the scenes or could in the near future through the advent of all this technology you've already described really improve the customer experience of the future.
Without question. And I think we've got a long ways to go. The technology is there. It's just a matter of implementing it and finding the right pieces, as we continue to kind of push the curve on what we can do.
Does any of your design thinking involve co-creation or customer input at all?
We're in a business where our ultimate end user customers are really everyone. There's very few people that don't stay in hotels. So we're always getting input from customers. So it's a little bit difficult question to answer, but what I will say is that the brands of the world, the Marriotts, the Hiltons, the IHGs, the Hyatts, they've invested a lot in figuring out what the customer wants. Now, the challenge is every customer wants something different. We got the Brian Walkers of the world that want their room at 62 degrees. And now that they're going to be setting up guest profiles, they're actually going to be charging you extra $10 a night for that additional energy you're using, Brian, just as an FYI. But we're seeing all these additional brands that keep entering the market. Marriott right now alone has 30 plus brands and, that are meant to target a different demographic of the industry. It's everything. If we're looking at a mid-20s year old millennial in an urban environment, that's what Amoxy's targeted to, where it's super edgy. We're talking about things like shared male and female bathrooms on the first floor and no check-in desk. You walk up to the bar, you get a drink, they hand you your key, and trying to segment all of these brands into different kind of silos so that they're distinguishable to a customer. Because to the average customer, it's a hotel, and you look, okay, well, maybe I'll check the reviews online at TripAdvisor. Oh, what are the services? Do they offer free breakfast? But often the customer doesn't see the difference. They don't realize that they're staying in a hotel that's really targeted towards a traveling businessman on extended stay trips. So I think that we get input typically through the brands more than anything about what they're targeting in a specific product.
Base 4 is global and moves really fast. You're 2 times on the Inc. 5000 list, just like AE Marketing Group. What's the secret to your success, Blair?
Well, we've been very fortunate. We've grown very, very quickly over the last 8 years. I guess I'd attribute it to a couple main things. First off, surrounding ourselves with great people. When we started Base 4, I wouldn't say that we had any idea we were going to be in the hotel business. There's a famous analogy in Good to Great, a great read that talks about loading up the bus with great people and then figuring out where we're going to drive the bus. I, at that time, had, you know, we had three business partners total in the US, or I should say three partners in the US. And we got together in a room and, you know, just talked about building this company and realizing that we had a great group of guys, a great staff at that time that we knew we could reach out to, not knowing exactly what we wanted to offer specifically, but letting the market drive our product. And, you know, and ultimately that's how we fell into this hotel niche. You know, we went out in a lot of different areas and eventually found, hey, this is a great segment for us. This is where we can really induce technology. It's a very antiquated industry. It's a very segmented industry with a lot of different players that are, you know, offering services, you know, on a much smaller scale. You know, our typical competitor for our projects is a 5 to 10 person company that's, you know, outsourcing a lot of their services, working in a traditional AutoCAD. So when you come into an industry like that, and you're a 230 person company, you're offering everything in-house and you're bringing all this technology piece, it's ripe for innovation. And that wasn't something that it was highly targeted from the beginning. We stumbled upon it while we were looking at the market. So, you know, and the other piece there that I'd say is, you know, one of our secret sauces is that the base four, the four in our name actually stands for our four underlining values of our company. And this is something that's been basically the basis of starting this company to begin with. And those are honesty, humility, respect, and fun. And we basically ask all of our staff, all of our colleagues, all of our customers to salute that flag. You know, and when we started the company, we were coming from much larger organizations. We're in an industry sector that's ripe with, you know, I don't want to say disrespect, but time is money. If you would imagine the typical contractor, you know, that they're very much on the move. There's an extreme lack of humility, extreme lack of respect, and ultimately, at the end of the day, it wasn't fun. You know, and that's why we started Base 4. We said these are going to be our underlying principles that are going to drive what we do. And, you know, we've carried them with us all along. And we've quite frankly, we fired clients. You know, if you're the type of client that's going to write me an email in all caps with exclamation points on a Saturday afternoon and say, you have to call me now when I'm spending time with my kids, you know, we shouldn't be doing business together because we have a different value system. And we've held to that. And our employees love it. You know, we have a great deal of flexibility, especially with our U.S. staff. We have a row environment, which means that we're a results-oriented work environment. You know, we don't have set hours. Majority of our staff work in their pajamas, you know, and they can take off for the day, go to, you know, spend time with their kids at school, come home, go to the gym, as long as the work gets done. So I think, you know, those are kind of been the keys to our growth over the last few years.
Well, that makes a lot of sense based upon some things that you told me almost a year and a half ago when we were sitting next to each other at those Inc. 5000 awards. I didn't know it to the extent, but over the course of the last year and a half and seeing some of these pieces come together, it definitely shows a lot about the values of the organization. And I think a great culture really can translate into, you know, a great bottom line. Which is obviously a key factor in being on that Inc. list and a number of other areas as well. I also know something that you told me that night in San Antonio, and I've seen it since, is that you're constantly traveling. It's part of what you do as CMO. It's part of what I do as well. So when you're not traveling for business, is there a favorite place you like to go just for yourself or with your family, or maybe there's a bucket list destination you haven't gotten to yet?
Oh, geez. Well, you know, I travel a lot for work, as you've alluded to, but traveling for business is often, you know, it could be any hotel and any airport in any city, and it all starts to blend the same. When I'm with my family, you know, honestly, we're very simple. We like to go where the people aren't usually, you know, in the summers here up in the Midwest, that means going up to the lake, staying in the cabin for the week, you know, just kind of really unwinding from the fast pace of life, of, you know, running a business, you know, having a family. So I would say usually it's that type of vacation. You know, prior to kids, my wife and I did get the opportunity to travel quite a bit, and I've been some really cool places around the world. We actually lived in Shanghai, China for a year, so I got to travel quite a bit around Asia. I don't know that I'd say I have a bucket list of places that, you know, I definitely want to see. I'm a guy that just likes to go new places. I love travel, and I think I love travel outside of business travel, I should say. So someday, maybe Brian and I can get together in about 10 years here. And
Well, I wonder also if at some point we've been crisscrossing each other and never known it in an airport somewhere. But, you know, I already alluded to my secret about my hotel room temperature, but another secret about me is that I enjoy travel. Certainly in the personal side of life, but I do not like to fly at all. I've never really kind of gotten used to that, even when I used to be constantly on airplanes. I don't love that aspect of travel, but I agree with you that business travel is important to our jobs, but it's never as glamorous as people on the outside think it is. But I can hear you about the destination of just kind of disconnecting and taking a step back and focusing on what really matters.
Without question, especially when you're 6'5" like me jamming into planes. I can feel you there, Brian. Planes are not getting any bigger, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. So,
well, you guys both have a lot of travel stories. I wish we had time to hear more of those. But Blair, how can we learn more about you and Base 4? We're so grateful you came on our show. Tell us where our listeners can find you.
Well, the best way to be to go to our website, www.base-4.com. You can sign up for the newsletter I alluded to there if you'd like to learn anything about the hotel industry and kind of the trends that we're seeing. I certainly can pass up my email address to anybody that would like to reach out directly and ask any specific questions.
And as we kind of talked earlier, the content is really great. So even if you're not looking to develop a hotel anytime soon, I love it because I see all these interesting things that you're doing from a technical perspective, design trends. And again, ultimately, it goes back to that customer experience. I just saw something that you shared this week about why it's so important to think through where you put a pool in a hotel for the sake of sun shadow. Like, there's just all kinds of really neat things I see you're doing with 3D modeling and other type of VR technology. So I would definitely encourage people to take a look at that, base-4.com. Blair, again, I know you are super hard to pin down because of, as you've just alluded to, you're constantly moving. I'm so grateful for you being on the show. I'm glad at the chance meeting that we had at the Inc. 5000. Look forward to hopefully seeing you at a future Inc. 5000. And wish you all the best with your continued success. And I hope 2018 is a great year for you and a great year for Base 4.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's been great being on, and I'm glad we were able to finally connect here. And certainly looking forward to some exciting things in 2018, and hopefully we'll be seeing AE in San Antonio.
Me too.
All right. Thank you, guys.
I want to thank our listeners for joining us in the Brand Lab today and to invite you back next Tuesday as we continue our journey of today's most innovative brands as we learn how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. Until next time. To hear other episodes of the Brand Lab series, visit brandlabseries.com or visit iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Brand Lab Series. And if you have any questions or would like to participate in a future Brand Lab, email us at info@aemarketinggroup.com.
To learn more about Base 4, visit us at www.base-4.com.